Good afternoon, everyone. I'm James Keeler, joined by my colleagues from Maximus on the call this afternoon. Also, I'd like to welcome Catherine Boychuk, or KB. KB and I are going to be leading the conversation for the next 60 or so minutes. So this is live stream number 9 for us. Last week, during number 8, we spoke to three key things. First of all, how important it is at the moment to be making deliberate choices to create your re-entry trajectory. And there was full agreement that it would be much better to be doing these re-entries by design than by circumstance. We looked at 8 pivots that we think organisations need to consider during the re-entry design trajectory. And the third thing we spoke to was the requirement for alignment up, across and down in organisations during this re-entry phase. All of these things are in the air for us at the moment. Choices, decisions, creating alignment, op models, shifts in operations, homework mix, daily decisions through to long-term choices and trade-offs for the future of the business. I know we're all trying to do these things with high levels of accuracy and order. We also know that some of these things are being executed to differing levels of success, particularly as the context continues to shift. With all of these things are happening, it's also important to recognise they're happening during incredibly heightened emotional states. We're starting to see signs of what's been called the move from the third to the fourth quarter. And we know that with that comes high levels of fatigue, of tiredness, concerns, frustrations, even competition. Now, a funny thing we know happens during these times, our biases start telling us that we are, in fact, logical in our thought. Now, we wanted to kick off with an analogy for you this afternoon. All these things we think of as like elements in water. And when it's all going on, when it's all shaken up, we see this as dirty water. You can't actually see the particles. All you see is the grey. There is no clarity. So one of the key messages for this afternoon is to give you some time to let it settle. Let it settle so that all the parts that make up our world are easy to see, to act on some things, but to give others a little bit more time to settle. We've got to get the big things right. We need to allow time and space for clarity. We need to do this whilst also managing our own energy, as well as the energy in the system. So this afternoon, we have a couple of gifts for you. First of all, we've got some ways to think, some mental models to help you, for you to rely on. And the second thing is some time to think. So some ways to think and some times to think.
Last weekend, I hit the pause button. I'd been making so many decisions at pace, and the accumulation of 10 weeks of decision-making had caught up with me. I was surrounded by dirty water. I realised the stage that we're in is the most complex from a decision-making perspective. The third quarter is full of decisions, just as James alluded to earlier, but my decision bucket was overflowing. I needed a new way to improve my approach to decision-making, a new way to help me get my position back to making deliberate decisions. And while we can't help you with the actual decisions themselves today, our goal is to help you with how you can approach and triage the decisions you have to make in order to ensure that you have maximum impact. So today we're covering with you 4 things: how to define and triage the choices that need to be made, how to plan the pace you need to go at and where you need to accelerate or be patient, how you manage the collective energy in the system to support effective decision making, and how you manage your own energy to combat decision fatigue. As leaders, every day you are defining the choices that need to be made. And we know it's a given that you spend time assessing and triaging decisions through multiple lenses and trade-off choices. Now, one of these lenses we look at is ease and impact. We all want to find the quick wins and mega opportunities to pivot. It's in our very nature to do so. And this enables us to determine where is best placed our attentions and where we need to make our decisions. But as we've been working with many clients to help determine those pivots to make, in doing the work, we've noticed a risk and a pattern emerging that I think it's important we talk about. The pressure and increased velocity of decision-making during times of disruption like COVID is showing up a bias towards taking action. And this is problematic, and it's problematic on many fronts. But the main two that I really am worried about is that the first is that not all decisions are created equal, and fast doesn't always necessarily mean better or more effective. So I wanted to draw your attention to this decision-making zone. Taking the time to plot the decisions you need to make across this matrix allows you to ensure you are clear on the positioning of your decisions across the dimensions of pace and value. The accelerated value zone, high pace and high value, is the obvious zone we think of. And we are seeing organisations successfully bring to life this zone in particular, especially if the decisions are easy to implement. The quadrant, though, that I think that we are underutilising right now is the top left quadrant, the patient evolution zone. The ability to understand which decisions require patience, require you to create space for your people to slow down, and they are usually the more complex decisions, the decisions that require options to be worked through, and importantly, where the cost of having to do it over, if you don't get it right the first time, is immense. So in summary, there are three steps in my approach to decision-making that I think are important. One, define the list of decisions to be made and triage these across ease and impact. Two, determine the decisions which are opportunities to accelerate, or alternatively, the ones that require patience. And finally, once you have your decision picture across this spectrum, you're then in a position to create alignment. And this alignment is important because it sets the pace expectations with the teams that you are tasking with bringing the work to life. So we'd like to hear from you, and we'd like you to discuss, how are you progressing with the decision-making as you move through re-entry? And how can you use the lens of acceleration versus patience to increase your zone of effective decision-making?
So I just wanted to take 2 or 3 minutes to hear any of the insights that came out of the breakout rooms.
James, in the group that we had, you know, great mix of, you know, large financial institutions, professional services, and also a not-for-profit. And the conversation went through sort of from an individual perspective, this idea of almost fatigue and what it can do to decision-making, which was a bit of the initial conversation. But where it rounded out was also about decision-making being heavily relied on purpose. So organizations that have put credit in the purpose bank and really spent time in that space, they're finding that their leaders are using purpose much more openly and transparently to navigate these decisions when they are complex or ambiguous.
Thanks, Brent. It's interesting how that purpose can actually transcend time, but also crises or not crises. It's just constant in organisations, or can be rather, in decision-making.
James, we spoke about the role that organisations have in really acting as leaders in terms of their corporate citizenship and role modelling what it might look like to be supportive of both their people internally, but also customers as we adapt to this new next phase, because there are going to be some people who are really excited to go back to the physical workspace and some people who may be really reluctant. There may be a whole range of different considerations that people have, like elderly parents or children, and they need to consider and how they grapple with those, and the role of organizations being able to pull themselves up and at a macro level create the right types of policies and environments that are supportive of both those extremities. And it's not easy. It's going to require some real forethought and real agility. And it was interesting because we spoke about how at NBN, there's quite a lot of agile methodologies, and going back into the physical space, you can see the artifacts from 3 months ago, potentially, and that there's been a big shift to online. So how do you preserve some of that new agility and online kind of scrums and workspaces without necessarily having to go back to the physical?
Dan, you've got a comment there in the chat about the structure of streams to focus on decision-making support.
So Yvette shared this one, particularly giving some insights into organisation and a culture that is quite conservative and potentially risk adverse in that way, and how opening up different streams has actually enabled people to focus and has accelerated decision making in some ways as well. So almost redistributing that decision making authority as well can actually really help speed up those decisions. So that was a really great insight from our discussion.
I think I might pick up on the culture piece as we just start to think around the energy in the system, because I think this next phase of the journey that we're going to be going into is going to be the toughest yet. And I'm actually concerned about what I'm seeing right now in terms of the depleted systems around us. We spoke a bit about fatigue, as Brent alluded to in our session. We're asking people to return to the office at the same time that many people have built a rhythm of working from home. And in fact, some people say, I work better from home. I'm more effective. I'm better in my relationships. I live across the road from a school. I can tell you schools are back in force, and there's an added layer of complexity with drop-offs as well, trying to navigate the 1.5 metre space. So people are exhausted. They're showing themselves more. We're seeing a lot more desk slumps on webinars. It's a big size. to blank screens when previously we saw them leaning in. I was actually talking as well to a CEO today whose organisation works with some of the most marginalised people in society, and he said his people are really starting to now feel the emotional toll of the work that they do. This variation in emotions puts significant demands on our energy, and oddly enough, in those situations, humans obviously often react by doing more. So we think there's something to work with in the collective energy management. And we think that's about both tracking the energy depletion attributes. We spoke about this a few live streams ago, actually, what empties the energy bucket, as well as the energy recharging attributes. And we think that that's going to be a useful avenue for leaders to help organisations during this reentry phase. Humans, just like a battery, they're rechargeable. Personal energy is renewable. And this means that collective energy is renewable as well. So we just want to explore a little bit more on that topic. How do you actually do this? There's four things we want to walk through. So when you think about your team and the things that will give you the biggest bang for your buck about how you can inject energy into the system right now, the first thing we think is useful to consider is physical energy. So looking for and listening for the signals to help people physically recharge. Even looking at their nutrition, what are they eating? What are they talking about themselves actually eating? Are you conscious of them exercising? Talking about their exercise or going out for exercise? Are you getting emails late at night when previously they didn't? In other words, sleep. Do you think people are getting enough sleep and allowing for rest and recovery? So I think that's the first thing that's useful to scan, the physical energy. The second thing you can scan, similarly, is the environment for the quality of the energy. We know that when people are likely to be peaking, and we know when they're likely to be a trough, that's information that we've already got from the past. So try to assess the tide and the movement of this energy through the system. Is it consistent? Are there patterns to the peaks and the troughs? If you can understand the quality of the energy, where it is and how it's going to impact people, their feeling and their performance, we think the sweet spot is to identify what we call the peak load times and then predict when the team's energy is about to drop before people burn out and performance is affected. So I think there's a sweet spot there, and that's the quality of the energy. The third aspect is to be staying alert to the mental energy. Where do you find people focusing? Are they confusing busyness with creating impact? That expression, I don't know about you, but it's crawled back into conversations. We've gone through a period of putting a bit of a lid on busy, but now it's back. Things like working hard versus working smart. Are they focused on the quantity of output or on quality? Are they taking hours to write something which you know should take 20 minutes? If some of these things are coming up, help people with guardrails to maximise the impact and to make progress to outcomes. And then finally, and this came up quite a bit in our session, is spiritual energy, the energy of meaning. We all want to do work that matters. We all care deeply about it as well when others see that value. So if you see people who've lost engagement and momentum, have a conversation with them about the meaning and the purpose of the work that they're doing. So just four ideas there to both scan what's going on with energy, but also some ideas around how you can get involved. And of course, with all of these, you can just ask the question to help people. Now, that's at a systems level. KB mentioned earlier that moment on the weekend that she was exhausted, she was fatigued. She'd hit the decision fatigue wall. She had to stop. What was great about that was that she actually had the clarity in the moment to do it. But we also know that not everyone has that clarity. And it can actually be really risky territory because our brain looks for shortcuts. At best, we might be investing in those moments, the things which don't get us anywhere. And at worst, we might be making reckless decisions. And this is this principle of decision fatigue, which we think is an important one to explore. The byproducts of that are a few things, really. It's a reduced ability to make trade-offs. We avoid decisions altogether. And then we have a reduced willpower to actually make the difficult decisions and just maintain the status quo. This is all going to happen through fatigue. It's all going to happen because we're trying to make too many decisions, going back to Catherine's point earlier around slowing down and bringing people in. So there's an element here of our thinking, how we approach these elements with our thinking. Some of you on the line this afternoon will have heard of System 1 and System 2. System 1 thinking is our survival system. System 2 is where we start to make deliberate focus of attention and make choices. When we're fatigued, it's really easy to make choices via that first system, by survival. But we are recommending and really want to help people to make decisions in what we refer to as System 2. So deliberate focus of attention and on choices. Now, we have this idea that leaders need to know the conditions for great decisions. But part of knowing the conditions for great decisions is what are the signals that you're about to enter into a poor decision-making period. So I just came to open up some insights from some of our attendees tonight.
We had a good discussion in ours and just talked about the importance of the execs coming together and being able to stress test decisions with each other. And we talked about the frequency of that. So some within our group were very frequent, as in daily morning meetings and afternoon meetings. And we talked about what we did in our own team, just in terms of some of those radical candor discussions and how they helped open up the way we challenge each other's decision making. Having that voice of challenge around you, who is someone trusted, who can check you on how you're being when you're making those decisions, I think was really something that we thought was important.
If I extend that, if I don't have that voice of challenge around me, is that a trigger for me that I'm actually not thinking about this properly? If I haven't had the voice of dissent around me, is that a trigger that maybe my decision making's not at the level it should be?
Chelsea talked about the mental load. So the mental load of carrying around the pending decisions. And when that mental load felt too heavy, that was her signal to stop and get it out. And we talked a lot about my obsession with post-it notes. And so for those of you that weren't in my breakout group, if I can't make a decision in the moment because it's not my sweet spot, like you can ask me questions about technology all day, great. You're asking me about accounting, I am not your girl. So I will write any questions that are not in my zone on a post-it note and stick it on my wall next to where I work. You know, that was my trigger for pressing pause last weekend, was because I looked at the 54 post-it notes and went, oh my goodness, I haven't had the space to work through them all. So we did have a conversation about how do you just be aware of where your sweet spot is in decision making and have a process in place to capture the ones that aren't in your sweet spot.
Cabby, I really like that idea of the signal that you see all these post-it notes in front of you and you make the call in the moment. That's the trigger. There's something that's not quite right here. So with that in mind, we wanted to just provide you with a couple of ideas, seven in fact, around how to combat what KB described there as decision fatigue. I've got 52 post-it notes that all require a decision. I can't get to it. I need to pause. I need to stop. I need to do something about it. So just provide you with a couple of thoughts here. So the first idea there around divide and conquer. That's essentially what KB did there. All of the post-it notes that require some space, some time for you to find a position on. So divide and conquer is number one. Second one is to reduce the unimportant and to increase the optimal. You might know, you might not, that Mark Zuckerberg actually took a page out of Steve Jobs' book after noticing that Steve Jobs always wore the black turtleneck and jeans. And in various interviews over the years, part of the reason he did that was he preferred to use his brain to make decisions that serve billions rather than what he's going to wear that day. So a consciousness around the unimportant to increase your thinking around the optimal. Third idea is just to share your decisions and the thinking behind it to bring others along. Sharing, I think, is a very underutilized technique with decision fatigue because we feel like we've got to do it ourselves. We feel like we've got to get to the outcome. And that's right, we do need to get to the outcome, but we've got contemporaries around us who can help. So sharing your decisions. Fourth idea is to consider making quiet rather than noisy decisions. Quiet decisions are courageous, they're intentional, they're actually harder to make. And by that, it's going to just slow you down, pause, take it down a notch. Fifth idea is to phone a friend. If in doubt, get support. If in doubt, talk it out. The sixth idea for you this evening is around iteration and pivoting. When you think about some of these decisions, we're actually creating the future. So don't feel like you can't iterate your decision. Pivoting is necessary. If you get more information, some of the ideas that precede this, you're going to get more information, you're going to get more data, you're going to get more insight. And it's okay, therefore, to iterate and to pivot. And the final idea is one that was coined by Colin Powell, the 40-70 rule. He said that to make decisions, the sweet spot is 40 to 70% of the total information. He said that anything less than 40, and we're actually guessing, it puts us in a spot where we're actually guessing. So anything less than 40% of the information about a decision, we're guessing. Anything beyond 70%, and it's actually too late. So the sweet spot of decision-making between 40 and 70, hence the 40-70 rule. So just a couple of ideas. It really takes KB's moment of, too many post-it notes to help you with combating what we call decision fatigue. So with that, everyone, we just want to leave you with a pearl of wisdom. Thought of the day, the science of decision-making is to make sure there is an effective decision-making process in place. Decision-making is an art only until the person understands the science. So with that in mind, everyone, thank you for spending time with us this evening. We hope that you've gained some insights and ideas around the pace of your decisions, thoughtful decision-making, combating decision fatigue, as well as considering the energy, both yourself as well as the system, as you re-enter and all the decisions that we're going to need to make as we do that.